This is case number 50740, Arnold Simon, appellant versus Amy McClure, respondent. We have Mr. Marshall S. Willick for the appellant, Mr. Kirby R. Wells for the respondent. And the panel looks very much forward to these fine family lawyers making these arguments. We're excited to have you both here. Whenever you're ready, Mr. Willick.
May it please the court, Justice Cherry, Justice Gibbons, Justice Zeta, and it is a pleasure to be here to respond to your first point. We very much appreciate not having to go to Carson City to give this argument. The facts of this case are pretty straightforward, and if the court's fully familiar with them, I'll skip over them. If not, then I'll briefly recite them. The only essential jurisdictional facts is that the child was born in the state of California. Both parties happened to relocate there in 2001, mom from Las Vegas, dad from New Jersey. Arnold returned to New Jersey in 2003. Mother and child left California in 2005 and came to Las Vegas. And the modification motion was filed in 2007, 2 years later. It was served on mom in Las Vegas, and the proceedings have gone from then to now uninterrupted. I think that the primary issue is pretty straightforward.
Now, Ms. McClure lived in Nevada at the time she was served with this back in 2007.
For about 3 years.
Yeah, but she was living here at that time.
At that time. Okay. This was the only place she had a home. This was the only place she had a car. This is where her child was enrolled in school. This is where she apparently had a job. This is home. For all every purpose shown by the record, Mr. Simon lived in New Jersey, which made him an out-of-state party seeking modification. And that's how UIFSA works. If everyone leaves the state that originally renders an order, both parties are required to file to play an away game. If she wanted to modify, she would have to chase him in New Jersey. If he wanted to modify, he'd have to chase her in Nevada. No other state anywhere could modify the existing California order. UIFSA was set up that way in 1996 as an accusal. The Conference of Commissioners has made clear there's never been an amendment to that structure. It's always been intended to work that way. The technical wording amendments that went into place in 2001 that this court commented on in the unpublished order 2 years ago in my other case that is now part of the Nevada statute merely clarified that that's always been the law. So,
and Mr. Wilk, I know we have, I think, three main issues here. Also, I'm concerned Judge Delvecchio didn't make any findings and conclusions and all on that, on all these particular issues. You want to address that?
Is that the absence of findings? The only finding that he made was that California was the state of original issuance. And he confused the concept of controlling order, which the California order obviously was, with the concept of modification jurisdiction, which is totally irrelevant to the issue of what state modified it. And I have no explanation for that. It's merely what he said.
Okay.
What
about the retroactivity issue there like that? The retroactivity?
We don't think there is a retroactivity issue. When the accusal clarifies, that's used twice in this case, and I'm not sure which piece you're talking about. It's the registration statute?
Amendments to the UIFSA apply retroactively?
There have been no amendments to it, only clarifications. And the accusal couldn't have been more clear in stating over and over again, we're not changing anything. We're not changing anything. We're merely clarifying what is true. It's exactly what this court noted in the footnotes in the unpublished order that previously went up, which is why we need a published opinion, because this keeps happening. This is a recurring problem with family courts, where for some reason, despite the clarity of the statutes, some of the judges down there just don't seem to get it. That jurisdiction is established at the moment that a motion is filed, and you can't defeat that jurisdiction by choosing to leave the state thereafter. But twice now, in the last couple of years, I've stood before this court where parties have done exactly that, where they have gotten up in the middle of the case and moved to California and said, I don't have jurisdiction, and for some reason, at least two judges of the 8th Judicial District Court have said, oh, well, okay then, bye. But that's not how it works. If the court had jurisdiction at the moment of filing, the court has jurisdiction to the moment of decision. And your unilateral relocation of the defendant during the middle of the case is irrelevant to the court's jurisdiction and power to dispose of the case, which is really all this case is about. The rest of it is a sideshow. The other retroactivity piece, which is why I asked which piece you were talking about, had to do with the technical correction to the registration statute, which is not technically before this court at all. I merely said that the...
I wasn't talking about that.
Okay. So
what about the registration not done under Chapter 13611 versus what it was done under Chapter 125A? What's your comments on that?
Well, that's the piece I was just talking about. The legislature finally got around to fixing this. The original form of the statute called for the registration...
I realize this was in between. I understand that, but... what's the legal effect of that, though? The fact that it wasn't fixed at the time this occurred?
Oh, it was fixed by the time it went to hearing. By the time of the hearing in October of 2007, the legislative change to the statute to conform with the way we've always done it, which was passed in May, had gone into effect as of October 1. And all that did was say that the spurious language of the statute, talking about a non-existent policy under the State Information Agency, which nobody knows about, nobody can do, because there was no such procedure, meant that people should do what we've always done since 1997, which is file the out-of-state support order with the district court and then move for modification, because there was no other mechanism to do it. The position of my opponent that, well, if the statute had a technical impossibility in it, what that means is nobody can ever register an out-of-state child custody order and you can't modify it, that's just silly. It would be silly public policy. It would be contrary. It would mean that every child support case that this court has heard that came from an out-of-state source, 1997 to now, was invalid. If their position is valid, none of those out-of-state child support orders were ever validly registered in the state of Nevada. And that can't be the case. So the statute should be read to make sense, which would have to be in compliance with the uniform practice of everybody, for the 10 years before the technical amendment saying the way we've always done it is the way you should do it went into effect. And in any event, that has nothing to do with jurisdiction, which is the only issue here. Mm-hmm. And even if it did, it was fixed before the hearing. So it's applicable under the case law that we've set out. And then, of course, there's the matter that there is no cross appeal. And Judge DelVecchio never said anything. All he said is, I don't want to hear about the registration. That's fine. I don't want to hear about it. He never said that there was any problem with the registration. So there was no such finding. That's really about all I have to say. I realize that's pretty simple. I'd like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal, if I may.
That'll be the order. You have 7 minutes and 30 seconds left. Mr. Wells, on behalf of the respondent.
Good morning. May it please the court. It's always a pleasure to argue these kinds of cases because I think that they're both interesting and they're somewhat technical, and I think that I have a forte in that area, as does Mr. Willick. First of all, let me correct several things that he's just told you, which I think are incorrect. First of all, the district court's ruling was in response to the motion which we filed to dismiss the registration. He granted that motion. So it wasn't that he ignored it or said he didn't want to have anything to do with it. If you read the transcript and the order, which I have right here.
I think we had it, Mr. Wells. We understand it was a dismissal. That was the vehicle to get it up.
And the fact is that while the appellate wants to argue that once a motion is filed that the jurisdictional issue is fixed is simply not correct, because there's a two-step process here as clearly set forth in the statute. It requires, first of all, proper registration. And one thing I really want to correct that Mr. Willick says is that our position is somehow that there's no way to properly register a foreign support order in the state of Nevada for enforcement or modification. It has never been our position. That's silly. What we've always said is that the proper vehicle for modifying a foreign support order is Chapter 130. And, in fact, this court said the same thing in this opinion that was appended to the case memo that was filed, although it wasn't cited in the appellant's brief, This unpublished opinion, I guess, of Smith versus Thompson specifically refers to the registration having taken place under NRS Chapter 130. It doesn't say 125. 125 is a custody enforcement statute. And to this day, the appellant has always taken the position, doesn't make any difference, but he's wrong. It does make a difference because there are significant differences in the way you, the notice requirements under Chapter 130 versus 125, and what the district court's obligation is to do if they're faced with a custody enforcement order versus a support modification order. I almost feel like I'm going to wave this statute. I feel like Joe McCarthy I have in my hand. If you look at the plain language of the statute, and this is the 07 version after modifications, but it doesn't make any difference. It says, Chapter 125A, Uniform Child Custody Jurisdiction Act. Doesn't say anything about support orders. If you look at, I had it marked and I just, hold on. If you look at Chapter 130, it says, Interjurisdictional Support Enforcement Act, Chapter 130, Interjurisdictional Enforcement of Support. And there's a, and there is a specific section of this statute, which is Chapter 130.611, which specifically deals with modification of child support order of another state. How much clearer can this be?
Well, I guess, Mr. Wills, my and I'll assume Mr. Willick's argument for the purpose of this, like, now, it appeared it was filed under the wrong statute. I don't think there's any question about that. But if what he filed put your client on notice and it pretty much substantially complied with what had to be done under Chapter or NRS 136.11.
Good question. And I hope I have
the harm?
Good,
I mean, I'm going back to the district court days. So that's kind of how you look at
no harm, no foul. Well, frankly, I have two answers to that. First of all, it did make a difference in this case because under the 130, the correct statute, they have to give notice that she has, my client has, or anybody else has 20 days to contest the registration. See, and that's an important notice requirement because if you're going to contest either the validity of the foreign support order or the enforceability of it, you have 20 days to do that before the district court can invoke its jurisdiction and get to the merits of a modification motion. It doesn't make any difference that they can file a motion. It's any time after, I guess, after they file their notice that they want to enforce this foreign order, but the notice says they can't do anything. The court has to give that person, the non-registering party, 20 days to file a protest, okay? And that's exactly what she did. That's exactly what she did. And her notice about the enforceability was two steps. Number one, I'm not a resident. And number two, you didn't cite me under the correct statute. There's a different statute that has different notice requirements. They obviously recognized that because after she physically departed the state, and that's a key fact here that was not disputed in the court below, that she just departed the state in August of 07, they filed their amended notice giving her the appropriate notice of the 20 days in September of 07, and that's not disputed. In fact, I'm going to talk about the facts just a little bit here. But the point is that actually, if you want to carve out an exception to this notice, very specific notice requirements of the statute, which involve putting the state of Nevada on notice because the state of Nevada has an interest in protecting its citizens. In other words, if somebody wants to reduce child support, and let's say the person here is on public support and getting, you know, welfare benefits, the state has an interest in that procedure, and that's why there was a notice requirement in the state, which, again, they didn't do. So, and this is a Uniform Act, Judge. This is not something that was cooked up by the Nevada legislature. This is a Uniform Act, and there are reasons to have these notice requirements. I don't think that it is good policy from any stretch of the imagination to simply carve out an actual notice exception to the otherwise mandatory requirements of notice in this case, because it conferred valuable rights on Amy to contest this before she had to spend money for attorney's fees contesting the merits of this case. I want to talk about the actual facts that the judge relied on to make his decision that there was no jurisdiction. As we all know, physical presence by itself does not establish personal jurisdiction. This statute, Chapter 130, the correct statute, specifically invokes the jurisdiction of a new court here in Nevada only if there's a personal if the court has personal jurisdiction over the non-registering party. It's right in the statute I quoted to. Personal jurisdiction in this state, based on residency, has always meant both physical presence or domicile plus intent. You could argue that she tried to do, through some artifice, escape Nevada and deny that she was a lawful resident to defeat his petition. You could argue that, except for one salient point, and that is in March of 07, before the Nevada court system was even a gleam in Mr. Simon's eye, her attorneys in California had sent to his attorneys in California, where the order comes from, or the order comes from, a unfiled motion to modify the custody in California. And they had attached to that, and that was part of the record below, her declaration signed under oath in March of 07 that she intended to move back to California, that she couldn't make it in Nevada anymore. There were lots of things going on with Mr. Simon and his divorce in California. And again, Mr. Willick makes representations about his residency. None of that was ever really presented to the court below. What we do know is that at the time that he initiated this petition here in Nevada, he was enmeshed in a very contentious and expensive divorce case in Los Angeles County in California, where he was getting divorced from his long-term wife. So whether he was a California resident, New Jersey, New York, doesn't really make any difference. The point is that she had already declared her intention to return to California and institute a procedures there to modify the existing support order. It was Mr. Simon who tried to do an end run here. After getting that notice and saying, gee, I'm going to be fighting about child support again with this woman. I'm fighting another battle in divorce court here in California. Maybe I can get a better shake in Nevada under the Nevada court system, who are have a reputation, at least in his mind, or some people's minds, of not being as generous with regard to child support as they are in California. And there's no question about it. The child support, which he agreed to for this child, for Kylie, is significant. It is a lot of money. And he might have a better chance convincing a Nevada judge, I guess, that he should pay less child support. But that's not the point. The point is that he was on notice of her intent to relocate to California, sell her house here, at the time that he filed this petition. It is a factual question as to two significant times that I think militate in favor of the judge's decision in this case. When she was initially defectively served, or served with a defective notice, she was still physically present in this state, but had declared her intention, uncontradicted in the court below, that she was moving back to California. This is not artifice on her part. This is something that had been done months earlier.